Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up today, staying involved as the pandemic continues. We have some thoughts on why it's important to fight the Zoom fatigue and continue advocating for agriculture. But we start today with a deeper look at that $1.9 trillion stimulus bill signed by President Biden yesterday. Joining me on the phone is National Farmers Union Vice President of Advocacy, Mike Strands. All right. Well, first, I know that you're very busy, so I want to thank you for taking a few minutes with me. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate the chance.
So the COVID relief bill was somewhat, well, definitely partisan in Congress, but there are things in the package that will benefit farmers around the nation. What are some of the key benefits for the ag industry?
Certainly. So throughout the pandemic and the experience of the last year, we saw how stress on our food system in the form of the pandemic just made pre-existing problems even worse. And a lot of that had to do with processing and with distribution and with our marketing chains. So this bill that President Biden signed into law earlier on Thursday will kind of take a look and provide important funding to help out with food supply chain resilience. So USDA, for instance, will be receiving $4 billion to help out in purchasing food and commodities for distribution to people in need, and to offer grants and loans to small and mid-sized processing facilities to help with their ongoing COVID response, safety, and to help be more resilient in the event something like this happens again. Another thing that'll help out, particularly on that stress that was placed on the food supply, is helping with capacity for small and mid-sized meat processing facilities. There's been some help already in previous stimulus packages, but this one includes $100 million to help pay overtime fees for inspections by federal meat inspectors at some of these small and medium-sized processing plants. And this will help scale up and get more of our livestock processed and eliminate some of the backlogs that we've seen across the country. So those are a few spots. Again, though, there's some broad-based support for increasing resiliency, assistance for people who've been affected by the pandemic, and also addresses some longstanding inequities in agriculture through loan forgiveness and debt assistance for socially disadvantaged farmers.
If we can take just a closer look at some of these points, just start off with the big one, the USDA getting $4 billion for the food system. What do you think we'll see in the trickle-down effect as that goes from the $4 billion to the USDA to benefiting our farmers around the nation?
Sure. As we saw the food system really turn on a dime last year when supply chain and demand shifts changed in ways that had taken decades to build up to, suddenly turned over in a course of weeks, there's still been some residual reverberations from that. So in conjunction with some of the legislation passed in 2020, both in the CARES Act in March of 2020 and then the package that passed late in December of 2020, this adds to that in terms of the $4 billion to help out. A lot of this will go to nutrition assistance. So USDA will be purchasing excess commodities or just purchasing commodities and farm products in order to feed and help with programs that get food to hungry people across our country. So that takes up some of that demand that's shifted and buys up some of the excess supply that we've seen in commodities, fruits and vegetables, meat, unit. So that'll help out for farmers' bottom lines with some new marketing opportunities.
Vaccine distribution. This is important everywhere, but in California, especially in the agricultural force, our farm workers need access to vaccines. They are getting it now, but how will this make a difference in that effort as well?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that. The American Rescue Plan Act includes $500 million for USDA to offer emergency grants on rural healthcare. Obviously, that's directed towards vaccination, both on distribution capacity, the surge capacity in medical facilities, increasing telehealth capabilities, reimbursement for lost revenue from the early days of the pandemic, especially when a lot of healthcare facilities were hurting because of the people that were concerned to go in for more routine healthcare in light of the pandemic. In any case, getting more vaccinations out there, more shots in arms, particularly for farm workers, will be a big part of USDA's grants and what they'll be offering through that. There's still a lot of work to be done by USDA in figuring out how exactly that will happen, but the resources are being made available now through this bill or law now, and I expect in the next several weeks to the next couple of months, there'll be some fast action to get those grants out there to help get people the vaccinations that they so desperately need.
As you know, so many of our, you know, most of our farms around the nation and in our state are family farms, and many of them qualify as small businesses. And there's a lot of benefit to, or there's some benefit to small businesses in the relief bill as well. What should small businesses be looking for now?
Sure. And this has been a moving and evolving topic for so many farmers in the last year where, by and large, farmers and farm businesses weren't eligible for Small Business Administration programs until just a year ago, less than a year ago now, when the first of the Paycheck Protection Act or the Paycheck Protection Program and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Advance Grant programs really kicked into high gear. So this bill passed on Thursday includes an additional $50 billion to aid in small business. And of that, $28.6 billion is destined for restaurants in particular. So while that doesn't directly assist farmers, it certainly helps out other parts of the supply chain that are so important to us. But so with that infusion of additional funding, with in this particular bill, $7.25 billion will go to PPP and $15 billion will go to the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. There'll be presumably another round of eligibility for farmers, farm businesses, other sectors of agriculture to have access to some of these kind of bridge programs. And, you know, demand was off the charts for these back last spring and summer. And as there were additional opportunities to sign up with this additional infusion, we'll have another chance to get more people served by that.
So I know that the National Farmers Union was pleased with this passing. From the point that we're at now, is there anything else that NFU would like to see happen to get the nation and the nation's farmers back on their feet?
Certainly. We were, in fact, very pleased to see this bill passed. It does a lot of good for agriculture. It also does a lot of good for the economy as a whole. And jump-starting some of the individual Americans' economic decisions and providing stimulus checks for people who working Americans, working families, and just the economic harm that's been done to so many of our fellow Americans in the last year can't be understated how important it is to get that help there. But what will probably be remembered for the last year, what all of us in this country will look back to some years from now, is what did we learn from this experience? Did we help those who were most in need? I think we've done a lot to do that. Have we learned lessons about how our food system is structured and how our agricultural economy can really be resilient, but it can be brittle. And we'd like to see more emphasis placed on investigating and enforcing antitrust regulations and making sure that we're not putting all of our eggs in one basket, so to speak, or processing 98% of our beef production at 50 plants across the U.S. We need to look at consolidation in a serious and meaningful way, and we're hearing from senators on the Agriculture Committee, on the Justice Committee, or on the Judiciary Committee, who are going to start looking into that this year. So the assistance is helpful. It will go a long ways and make some lasting changes, but we also need to make adjustments to competition and consolidation of the ag marketplace.
We continue talking about advocacy in a bit with the Sacramento County Farm Bureau. When we come back, though, we have today's news brief. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Welcome back. Here's your news brief for today. The California Department of Water Resources Thursday released the draft California Groundwater Update 2020 with information on the condition of the state's groundwater. Officials say it is especially important as California faces a critically dry year. In a video released by the DWR Thursday, Program Manager Stephen Springhorn explains the purpose of the update.
California's Groundwater Update 2020 is the state's comprehensive inventory and analysis of statewide groundwater data and information on groundwater conditions, use, and management. The report recognizes the historic passage of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act in 2014 and builds a statewide framework to share new information and progress made by locals who are managing groundwater basins across the state. It also highlights emerging topics such as water markets and the impacts of climate change on groundwater. It summarizes groundwater information for each of the state's 10 hydrologic regions, presents findings on the state's groundwater conditions, and makes recommendations for improved groundwater management. California's groundwater directly supports numerous actions described in Governor Newsom's 2020 California Water Resilience Portfolio. The highlights document, available in English and Spanish, and the statewide report provide data and information to empower local water managers, communities, and families to work together to make informed decisions to better manage groundwater for long-term sustainability.
The report is available online. There is a 45-day public comment period. DWR says it encourages community members and water managers to review the publication and provide input. The U.S. Senate Agriculture Committee held a hearing on agriculture and climate change Thursday. Committee Chair Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan started the hearing by saying the ag industry knows the effects of climate change.
Just ask our Michigan cherry growers who experienced an unseasonably warm spring followed by a late freeze that destroyed their entire crop in 2012, and they've had challenges ever since. Or the foresters and communities out west who spent years growing trees and building their outdoor recreation economies, only to watch those potential dollars literally go up in flames from worsening wildfires. Or the countless farmers in the southeast who've seen their fields ripped apart by destructive hurricanes. The climate crisis might seem insurmountable, but our farmers and foresters are an important part of the solution. Right now, sustainable practices on farms and forests are helping producers cut down on their emissions and pull carbon out of the air and store it in the soil, roots, and trees. The foundation of this vision is the Bipartisan Growing Climate Solutions Act, which I am pleased to have introduced last session with Senator Mike Braun. This is common sense legislation to establish a structure at the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help farmers, foresters, and others implement climate smart practices and tap into new economic opportunities. Our legislation enables producers to build new streams of income through innovative carbon markets. Many farmers are interested in this opportunity, but just don't know how to get started, and that's what I hear in Michigan, and that's understandable. While the potential of carbon markets and addressing other serious greenhouse gases as well is very promising, I want to acknowledge that they aren't going to work for everyone as well. But that doesn't mean farmers can't embrace climate-smart farming and still benefit. Whether it's a corn and soybean grower planting cover crops after harvest, or a dairy farmer installing solar panels on the roof of their barn, or a forester managing their land to grow more mature trees that hold more carbon, these climate smart steps are good for the planet and they're good for business.
Witnesses, including representatives from the American Farm Bureau Federation, Environmental Defense Fund, National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, and the National Farmers Union, testified at the hearing on the food and forestry sector's role in delivering climate solutions. Senator Stabenow says she wants to hear from others as well.
However, the conversation doesn't end today. This is the beginning. We want to hear perspectives from every part of agriculture and the forestry economy, small, large operations, row crops, specialty crops, conventional and organic farmers, biofuel producers, and other drivers of the bio-based economy. We also need to bring the research community, land-grant universities, and other perspectives into this dialogue. Grassroots organizations focused on equity and frontline communities are vital to this discussion, and we'll continue to engage them. Additionally, trees and forests have the ability to store hundreds of millions of tons of carbon, a reality recognized by another impressive coalition in this space called the Forest Climate Working Group. That's why I've introduced two bipartisan forestry climate bills, one with Senator Portman, another with Senator Braun, that support responsible tree planting and climate smart forest management as tools to address the climate crisis. I look forward to working with all the members of the committee and our co-sponsors to reintroduce both of these bills in the coming weeks and moving them forward as well. In advance of this hearing, we've received a number of supportive letters and statements from important stakeholders, which I now request be added to the record without objection. Right now, everyone in agriculture and forestry should make their voices heard, because now is the time to act. Now is the time for us to lead. We can't afford to wait any longer. And I'm very proud to see so much leadership going on from our agriculture and forestry community.
Meanwhile, the House Agriculture Committee also met Thursday for a hearing. That hearing titled A Look at Food Insecurity. They discussed farm programs from the 2018 Farm Bill, along with current programs to feed the hungry during the pandemic and improvements that need to be made. Ranking member Republican Glenn Thompson of Pennsylvania gave praise to the people who helped keep people fed over the last year.
Whether it be the farmer who chose to donate their crop or the food bank who opened additional sites to be more accommodating, the witnesses before us, and every single person who helps keep these entities operational deserve our thanks and our sincere appreciation, Mr. Chairman. We're so appreciative of them. And while the department is not represented in today's hearing, I must give them my accolades as well, particularly the former administration, like it or lump it, the bulk of the response originated in the last Congress under President Trump. Quick thinking folks implemented pandemic EBT and the Farmers to Families Food Box Program, two projects that remain remarkably beneficial to families in need. The latter continues to fall victim to inconceivable criticism, and there is always room for more solutions to the needs of our nation. The Farmers to Families Food Box Program has opened eligibility, making certain anyone and everyone in need, regardless of status, income, or household size, has supplementary access to nutritious foods that run the gamut from fruits and vegetables to meat and to dairy. I would say some of the most nutritional foods that we could ever provide through our nutrition programs. This program has provided more than 143 million boxes to households across the United States. And with this program, farmers were able to redirect their products and American workers were able to sustain their employment or join new ventures, all to ensure fresh foods found their way into the homes of millions. Now, regardless of the cherry-picked hiccups this committee has heard about over the summer, the program has worked exactly as intended.
Committee Chairman Congressman David Scott of Georgia agreed.
Once again, I would like to welcome all of our witnesses and thank you for being here. And I echo the ranking member's comments about our witnesses this morning. And I hope that people all across this country who are watching this hearing, tuning in, to please call a friend or neighbor and let them hear, because the only way we're going to be able to respond to this hunger crisis is to listen, to learn from the people who are out there dealing with it every day.
President of the American Farm Bureau, Zippy Duvall, was one of the witnesses at the hearing.
I'm pleased to be here to offer the testimony on behalf of the Farm Bureau members across the country. When COVID-19 hit, it presented extreme hardships to America. The farmers were left with nowhere to go with their crops, the dairy and the livestock due to supply chain disruptions. And we found lines at our food banks over a mile long in some cases. Our nation's food insecurity was becoming more apparent every day, and it was imperative that something be done. As farmers, our mission is to feed our communities and our country. We were heartbroken that the produce, milk, and meat that we worked so hard, worked our heart and souls out to produce, wasn't reaching Americans that desperately needed it. Farmers across the country took it into their own hands to address hunger. Our county and state farm bureaus worked with churches and community centers to help meet the need. And help, we did. In the year of 2020, I am proud to share with you that our network of state and county farm bureaus across the country donated $5.4 million, 1.4 million pounds of food, and 20,000 gallons of milk to local food banks and food pantries. But we didn't do it all alone. At the pandemic's onset, American Farm Bureau immediately reached out to our friends at Feeding America to join together to call on USDA to help address break down in the supply chain. Some farmers had no outlet to sell directly to consumers, and many Americans had no access to our local farmers. And some didn't have the financial means to purchase the food. USDA quickly answered the call by standing up the Farmers to Families Food Box Program, which played a critical role in addressing hunger by delivering more than 140 million food boxes across the country. Even in times outside of a pandemic, strong farm policy, the work that this committee does, is critical and critically important to addressing the fight against food insecurity.
In other news, the National Grocers Association, the trade association representing the independent supermarket industry, is disappointed by this week's vote by the House of Representatives to pass the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, or PRO Act. The organization says it will continue to fight against the bill as it moves to the Senate. President and CEO of the NGA, Greg Ferreira, says the PRO Act overturns decades of U.S. labor policy and awards big labor a lopsided advantage against entrepreneurial businesses. The NGA says the PRO Act makes significant changes to long-established employment law, including eliminating the right to work laws in 27 states and limiting work for independent contractors. Proponents of the bill, like the AFL-CIO, say the bill provides basic protections to workers, creates workplaces that are fairer, and builds a stronger economy. That's your news brief for today. When we come back, we talk with an organization working to get vaccines to the ag community. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. Vaccinations are going out around the state, and one of the organizations focused on getting vaccines to the ag industry is United Ag. We have two representatives joining us now from United Ag. To start, go ahead and introduce yourselves.
So I'm Kirti Mutatkar. I'm the CEO president of United Ag. And excited to be here talking to you, Sabrina.
Hi, Sabrina. My name is Mirabel Ochoa, and I am the communications director and membership director here at United Ag.
All right. So can you start off with telling us about United Ag? I know that you do a lot of work for healthcare. Explain to us what you do.
So United Ag, we are an agricultural trade association, right? So what we say is we represent the empathy side of agriculture. So we represent the healthcare side, and we provide healthcare to the agricultural workers here in California and Arizona. And our health plan is a little bit unique because we are really, really looking into agriculture, trying to understand the needs of our industry, right? Which is very different when you really look at it from anybody outside. And so we have customized the way we do in customer service or our plans. Everything is customized to agriculture and how we deal with that. So we pride ourselves for that. The way we have come up with benefits, it's all around the needs of agriculture. And in fact, I think helping agriculture, others outside of agriculture are wanting to be part of this because we've brought back the empathy in healthcare, basically. Mirabel, anything on your end you want to add?
I think you covered most of the important things about our organization, basically a tailored approach on healthcare, not a one-size-fits-all approach. We take pride in really trying to customize our plans according to each region because not each region or commodity is the same. And that's what makes us very unique from a traditional health plan.
Okay. And so, and of course, over the last 12 months, the big thing in health, the big thing in everything has been COVID. And I know that you have done a lot of testing and now you're working on getting vaccines into people. Tell me a little bit about what you've been through over the last year.
So that's interesting. So COVID, when it started, it's been a year now, right? It's March. So it's been a year. And when we first started, the COVID hit, there was what we also realized, I mean, testing is one, vaccination is one, that's a direct impact, but we also noticed that a membership was looking to an organization that they trusted to help them in anything and everything. So that's what we actually stepped in and said, whatever we can help you with, because it was anxious, right? At least we still have a little bit of that, but it was a time of anxiety and stress. And so we actually have a health innovation pilot program, and we were at that time exploring a mental health benefit. And what we realized in March and April and May, that there was a lot of increase in anxiety issues going on. So what we did was we provided mental health free of charge, no copay, nothing going to deductible to all our entire membership, because we felt there was a need for that. So that's kind of started our addressing some of the needs from COVID-related issues. And then came the testing phase, right? So first was, what is this? What's happening to us? So that was anxiety. We treated that. Then we said, okay, how do we navigate this? Even from an advocacy standpoint, outside of healthcare, we actually stepped out and helped with that too. And then came time for testing and the need for testing and making sure the employers and the employees have a safe way of coming back to work, right? So we through our health and wellness centers, we have regional health and wellness centers, and through that we deployed that. We also through our chief medical officer, she provided a lot of resource for some of the employer groups. They reached out to her saying, what are the protocols, what should I be doing? Remember the time when we didn't know what 6 feet apart meant, and what how do we now go and harvest, and what do we do? So she, Dr. Rosemary Koo, helped kind of get on calls with our member employer groups and say, okay, this is what you should be doing, right? And so that testing and all that came in. And when vaccination, the first word we got, we said, okay, how do we deploy this to agriculture, right? So Mirabel and her team has been really, really amazing. They've been proactive. They've gathered up the information before we got the supplies in. So as soon as we got the supplies in and we start getting supplies in, we start deploying it, because we were prepped for it through health and wellness centers. We just needed supplies and we deployed it. Now we have vaccinated over 2,000 of our members. And one of the things that we're doing a little bit unique is from health plans, usually they're offering it to just their covered members. So what we believe is, it's not everybody in agriculture, right? If they have a health plan through us, if they don't have a health plan through us, it's a human thing to do, humane thing to do right now. So we said, let's open it up to everybody in agriculture. Anybody and everybody can walk into a health and wellness centers and we will provide the vaccination. So we've been in, really kind of been instrumental in that. And like I said, Maribel and her team, she gets calls on Saturdays and Sundays and she's been working around the clock to make sure that comes through. Right, Maribel, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, we've become like a, you know, 24/7 a triage service where employers would call us first during, you know, the first COVID phase, you know, how do we do a trace back? How do we coordinate, you know, on-site testing? Walk us through it. We're scared. We don't know what to do. You always need someone to assist you and, you know, help kind of ease the situation. And more than anything, provide the resources so it doesn't interrupt your work, right? Agriculture is very systematic. And so whenever there is, you know, something interrupting that whole chain, it can definitely disrupt your business. So that's what we've been able to provide. So yeah. COVID testing, now COVID vaccines. And I think next phase will be, you know, what do we look like in the next 6, 8 months, a year? And will business go back to how it used to be?
Yeah.
I like that you both bring up that there are many aspects to caring for people right now. You mentioned the mental health aspect. There's other health issues, you know, all working around the COVID pandemic as well. And so you're really looking at almost more like a holistic approach to helping people.
Right. And especially what happens in agriculture is, this is the underserved population, right? So some of our members. And so it gets overlooked. What we found even pre-COVID, when we were looking at some pilot programs that we wanted to launch, people don't look at agriculture. People don't look at people who are covered through our health plan. So we actually provided a way of bringing the vaccination, bringing the COVID testing to the underserved in California through what we do. And our health and wellness centers are strategically located in places where they don't, some of them don't have access to healthcare, right? Our Tulare Health and Wellness Center, it's hard for them to have a clinic, and then having a place that you can walk in and you actually feel safer during a time when everybody else kind of outside was a lot of anxiety going on. So what my lesson learned through this has been the importance of what we've done for all these years, that building of trust with our membership, because they started reaching out to Maribel and all of us for everything and anything, right? Because that they felt, okay, this is an association that we can trust. Because this is association. And at that time, when you're so anxious and there's so many else other things going on, you want to lean on someone that you feel is going to help you, right? So that's what I think we've served. It's like somebody you need to listen. Sometimes you need somebody just who listens to you, right? That's what I think United Ag kind of provided from a health side of things. So when people are like, hey, should we need elective surgeries? We offered support and what can that do and how can you safely get to do that? So the member services stepped in, everybody stepped in and said, let's walk you through this process because we need that, because there's the world outside kind of felt chaotic. So how do we remove the chaos?
Another thing I think we've really worked on, you know, this entire, you know, 12 months is really focusing and on the importance of prevention, preventative measures, you know, continue to see your doctors throughout this entire time, you know, don't be afraid. There's a lot of in the Latino population, which is the ag community, that are suffering from underlying health conditions and they're not being treated. So to help with that, this past October, we conducted an A1C campaign, of which I can say that currently we have about 400 members that are being treated for prediabetes or diabetes and other underlying health conditions. So we are not allowing COVID to change the way we are providing care. We're just simply modifying the way we're, you know, providing care or informing this information to our members. Since right now on-site is not available, we're using all of these channels like Zoom, picking up the phone, SMS campaigns, newsletters to really communicate this information.
And Maribel made a really good point. So what the telemedicine, right? Everywhere, any plate, anything you open, you hear telemedicine, right? It feels like a new thing. For United Ag, it's not a new thing. We've offered telemedicine for almost 8 years now. And what we realized happened during this time was that actually the utilization went up like crazy, right? So when we first offered this 8 years ago, some in the industry said, hey, who's going to use this in agriculture? And we actually felt in our utilization has been really high. And during the pandemic, it was really high. And the other thing, when what happened in March, April, May, June, when it was really high, people just started calling Teladoc, who's our telemedicine partner. And then the call waiting and call dropping became excessive, right? So then we said, how do we then help members who cannot get access through the Teladoc partnership that we have? And we opened up our health and wellness centers and said, call our nurses at the health and wellness centers, and they will provide telehealth for you. So that kind of, so you have in person if you want to go in, but that same provider will be able to offer you a teleconsult or whatever. So we opened that up pretty soon in April last year. That has actually been very helpful too.
As you pointed out, so many people, other organizations now too, are starting to use the telehealth. It's become known around the country. And I know that some lawmakers around the country are bringing more attention to it too, and trying to get funding for organizations like yours to make telehealth better and to improve upon it and to make it more accessible, even more accessible, I should say. Do you think that there might be, you know, a lasting effect for you?
Yep. Yeah, I definitely think it'll be lasting, because even pre-COVID days, right? So especially when an example, a story that we have, which we always tell is a mom, right? You have ear infections when you have young kids, you always have ear infections. And usually you waste 3 hours, you're waiting in lines, you go in, you get the amoxicillin, and you go home, you go to the pharmacy. So you have your days gone, your baby's crying, you're doing all this. So one of the moms, one of the stories that she said at the end, one of our conferences was, it was so amazing. I realized my daughter had ear infection. The doctor called, we saw it. The doctor went through the whole process, and she just drove over to the local pharmacy and got her amoxicillin and was done. That and she could actually, the baby was sleeping at home, and all this happened within your home, right? So it's definitely here to stay. It's definitely here to stay. And it might be even helping with your primary care services, might be more telemedicine. And then you have your specialization might become more the in-person. So that's going to be a definite shift. People are more comfortable accessing it right now.
And then let's talk about the vaccines, because you're having some success with getting vaccines to people too. How has that been going for you?
I'll let Maribel talk about that, but overall, the vaccines with our partnership with the Health and Wellness Center's partners, we've done a really amazing job. But from a big picture, what I see from Maribel's team is the way we have coordinated and kept on top of it, and have our local partnerships through the local counties and making sure we have vaccines available, right, the resource. And Maribel, I know you've worked really hard and your team has worked hard on this, so I'll let you answer this one.
Yeah, I think this whole vaccination project has really built a much more closer relationship with our human resources community. They are basically the point person for their employees, and just being able to provide answers to the many questions that our community has, like, is the vaccine safe? What are the side effects? When do I have to come back? Which vaccine is better? And simply walking them through this confusion, I will say, of this tier system that, you know, each state has developed. That's probably the biggest thing, is providing some tranquility, because each county has their own distribution plan, and that has been the biggest task for our team. Honestly, I feel like every day is a trivia. Ask me what county, I'll give you the information. Subject to change by tomorrow. As in next Wednesday, we are scheduled to move on to now, you know, the high risk patients. So once again, that would change the whole dynamic. So I think that's just really the biggest thing through this whole COVID project, and making sure that people stay patient, because, you know, it seems like everyone wants the vaccine now. And unfortunately, we can't do that. We have to follow guidelines. And we're trying to provide the vaccine as quickly as possible, to make sure that it doesn't, you know, the waiting game is basically where you might lose some individuals just because of, you know, they need it now, they want it now, and the resources just aren't there yet.
Where are some of the places around the state that you have facilities or that people can go to?
We have Tulare, we have up in Chico, Calusa, that region. We have Salinas, Santa Maria, and Visalia, so across the ward, yeah.
And we have two in Monterey County.
Yeah, King City, yep.
All right. Is there anything else that you think that we should be talking about?
I think maybe to end with, I would say, again, the importance of from a health plan and the trust that we build and what we're trying to do. So it's usually we tell our employers and employees, right? I mean, from a financial standpoint, you're very strong financially, United Ag. But we also make sure the employers and the employees, we're providing something for them that's financially beneficial to them, but actually providing the care that they need, right? So that's what we try to do. So COVID time, pre-COVID, post-COVID, that's what our focus is. And how do we give back to the membership, provide the best care and affordable care, right? That's our focus. And then bringing innovation and innovative ideas into the industry, which kind of sometimes the underserved part gets overlooked, right? So we're bringing it to the underserved population in California.
Thank you once again. When we come back, we're talking about the American Farm Bureau. We'll be right back.
Having problems with nematodes? ProMax is your number one solution. ProMax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. ProMax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRight Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/ProMax for more information.
The American Farm Bureau is holding its Fusion Reimagined conference today and into the weekend. It's held virtually this year due to the pandemic. The executive director of the Sacramento County Farm Bureau, Lindsay Liebig, is attending and joins us now on the phone. Well, the American Farm Bureau is having its Fusion conference. They're calling it Fusion Reimagined, and it is virtual this year. So what are you hoping to see this year?
Yeah, what we're hoping to see is really how young farmers and ranchers from across the nation have really, you know, reimagined what their participation looks like in advocacy and fellowship and uniting with, you know, their peers across the nation. One of the best parts about the Fusion Conference that American Farm Bureau puts on is it really brings together three groups within American Farm Bureau: the Young Farmers and Ranchers Program, the Women's Leadership Program, and the Promotion and Education Program. And so it's a really great opportunity for everybody to get together of all ages, all different types of production, professional sides of agriculture, and really have a chance to connect and learn from each other. And with the opportunity this year of it being virtual, really they can log in and participate, whether they're sitting on the tractor planting, whether they are, you know, working from a desk and helping, you know, their children with remote learning. They can really participate from anywhere. And so we're hoping that we're going to see increased participation because of the ease of access and being able to log in and connect from wherever people are at right now.
You know, and I have spoken with several people doing virtual conventions over the last year. And in fact, an organization I'm with hosted a virtual convention. And I hear that a lot, that it actually does open it up to more people who couldn't, you know, necessarily have afforded to travel otherwise.
Correct. You know, it's definitely not ideal as far as the human connection and interaction and all of those types of fellowship activities that typically go on at conferences. But there are some silver linings to this virtual side of things. And really, you know, it does allow, you know, a much more affordable way for people to participate. They don't have to travel, so they don't have to really take the time out of their schedule. And then what we're finding, too, is because the content is available and is preserved in a digital format, really people can log in and utilize that content at any time. So maybe the when the speaker is speaking, they can't log in and see that live, but they can definitely catch that when they're catching up on things in the evening or when they have some downtime that they may not have been able to, you know, tune in live to something. So we're seeing content being utilized long after it's actually delivered, which is hasn't been able to happen in a live format.
You know, as we continue going through virtual conferences and Zoom fatigue, we're hearing that more and more. It is real. People are getting tired of being virtual. Why is it important to keep going?
You know, it's important to keep going because none of our, you know, challenges or obstacles that we're facing in the world of agriculture are changing. You know, if anything, we're just seeing things brought in a different light. So, yes, you know, we're all experiencing Zoom fatigue and virtual meeting fatigue. Whether you are, you know, someone that meets on Zoom, you know, on a regular basis for your occupation, or whether you're simply, you know, helping your, you know, your kids go through distance learning, you know, we're all experiencing that. But what's important is that we continue to connect, we continue to work with each other, and we continue to really foster those relationships and don't allow those to kind of go by the wayside. And, you know, I foresee, you know, in the future that a virtual option being just another part, another layer of conferences. I definitely don't see it replacing in-person meetings, but it's definitely, we're seeing some added benefits of increased participation that may not have been there before, and just the ease of use if for some reason that the conference location or dates or times don't work for somebody.
And can we talk about, you know, agriculture advocacy in general, too? I know that Farm Bureau, you know, Farm Bureau speaks for farmers. How did you get involved, and what are some things that you're focused on right now?
Just in the general advocacy realm, you know, our meetings have not slowed down and our interactions and kind of what's going on in policy realm have not slowed down at all. If anything, I'm actually attending more things and being able to participate in more things because things are being done in a virtual capacity. So we're seeing that, you know, we're having, you know, meetings and issues stacked on top of each other. So we don't have to have the travel time of actually attending those in person. So my ability to actually network and reach out and get involved in more things has actually increased kind of during this pandemic because I'm able to, you know, attend more things from one location versus that travel time. Also, what we're seeing right now is especially with SGMA really ramping up in our area because we're in a basin that is on a 2022 deadline, we're seeing increased participation with farmers across our area in participation of public meetings and things because they can log in virtually and be able to deliver that information. So we're hoping that we can continue that momentum. We do, you know, are looking forward to having some in-person meetings here, you know, in the future in a safe capacity, but we're definitely seeing increased participation because we can provide that content digitally, especially if they miss the meeting. We can provide them copies of the recordings. And so we're getting more information out there because we have a digital component that we weren't offering before.
You know, you mentioned this fusion, the conference brings together a few different groups, and one of them being younger members and younger people in farming. What are you seeing as far as young people involved, especially in your area, in the Sacramento County area, but also if you're seeing it nationally? Are we getting more people involved?
We absolutely are getting more people involved. You know, young people are hungry for connection and they're hungry for a way into the industry that, you know, they can connect with their peers. Offering a virtual option for them to do that, you know, a lot of these younger people are very tech savvy and this works for them and they like being able to connect straight from a cell phone and things when they're on the go and on the move. So we're seeing, you know, a lot of participation in our own local meetings for having things virtual. And then an appreciation for when they can actually get together and host things in person. So we're liking that we can get, you know, groups together from across the area within our state, do some regional outreach things and really connect young farmers to other areas in their state so that they can, you know, foster that camaraderie together. And Fusion just offers an opportunity to do that nationally. And really connect with people that they may not have had the opportunity to do so because they may not have been able to take vacation time to be able to attend that conference in person, you know, or something like that. So for our younger audience in Farm Bureau, these virtual meetings have been very well received, and we will continue to do a lot of our outreach and participation in a hybrid format moving forward to ensure that we continue to capture those younger members into the Farm Bureau organization in our local area.
And then another group was women in agriculture. And I know that for, you know, as long as I've been involved, which has only been, 10 years now, in covering Farm Bureau and different events, there's been a very strong women in agriculture presence, and that continues.
Absolutely. So kind of different in California. California Farm Bureau does actually not have its own women's committee per se. That actually disbanded in the late 80s because what California Farm Bureau decided was that they didn't need a separate group for women because women were so immersed in our county boards and state committees and state boards that they didn't need a separate, section just for women. And so now other states do have a women's, leadership program and things and take advantage of that. We still have many women within California that take advantage of those national leadership programs, whether that's the communications program that's offered, just the fellowship or advocacy efforts and philanthropy opportunities. But really where Farm Bureau has been, very much of a standout is really providing solid leadership opportunities for women at all levels of the organization, whether that's county committees or county boards or issue advisory committees at the state or our state board, including our state leadership. We have our first woman vice president, Shannon Douglas, of the California Farm Bureau. So women are definitely celebrated and encouraged to take advantage of leadership opportunities at all levels within the Farm Bureau organization.
And is there anything else that you think that our listeners should know, or is there anything that we should cover for the Sacramento area?
For the Sacramento area, in particular, what we're doing is always continuing to promote these opportunities, really broadcasting the efforts that are happening within the organization nationally. But really, the biggest thing is take advantage of the opportunities as they're presented. Not only is this conference have amazing content, speakers, networking opportunities, but it's free. And so you can really register, log in, take advantage of these things, see what else is out there to be offered, and really, spur your interest for potentially attending in person in the future. As the conference does move around, the nation. So any of these opportunities through Farm Bureau, take advantage of them while they're there because the content's great and just meeting people and exposing yourself to new ideas is always good, regardless of what stage you're at in your Farm Bureau career or in your agricultural production career.
I've been fortunate enough to be a speaker at a couple of the Farm Bureau National Conventions, and they always have such great content and so many learning opportunities.
Yes, absolutely.
So, I agree. Thank you again to Lindsay Liebig. If you know of a story or a person who should be featured, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Crew, thanks for listening.